Leadership File on Premier.
Welcome to The Leadership File, your weekly show inspiring you to lead for Christ wherever you are. I'm Andy Pegg, your host, thanking you for joining us. And whether you're listening live or one of the many thousands who listen via the podcast, it's great to have you along. If you're new to the show, a reminder the show is available on demand via premierradio.com or via iTunes or Podbean. My aim with the shows is to provide knowledge, skills and attitudes for a Christian to lead so that God's work is advanced. So do continue to join us, and God helping us, we will flourish in his ways. Now, while there are generic elements within Christian leadership and within church leadership, most would argue that the nuances of any particular church will shape the precise nature of the ministry. And to some extent, this is determined by the size of the church. We all know that leading a church of 50 to 100 is a different world from one between, say, 300 and 400. Well, this week we're looking at managing the transition of leadership styles from a church where the pastor can know and, quotes, pastor everyone, to a size where that becomes impossible. And I'm joined by the Reverend Ian White. Ian is a recently retired pastor, having served as pastor in Purley Baptist Church, Chichester Baptist and Victoria Road Baptist in Eastbourne. He was, for some time, vice chair of Spring Harvest and has known the joys and challenges of adjusting his leadership for the different sizes of church in which he serves. So, Ian, welcome.
It's good to be with you, Andy.
Good. We've known each other for decades, of course, so lovely to meet you again and have this opportunity to chat. A little first on your experience of church life in terms of size and what this looks like in terms of your own background.
When I was a child, I went to a church where my father actually was the pastor. It was a church that began at about 60 people. And by the time he moved away, and obviously we moved as a family, it had grown to about 300.
All right.
So even though I was a child, an early teenager, I was aware that churches grew, but obviously not aware of what went on behind the scenes.
Okay. And as it happens, numbers have been a part of your working life before pastoral ministry.
For sure. Yes, I started life as an academic mathematician and went through the, you know, the academic mill and got a PhD and did some teaching in maths, and then got headhunted by British Petroleum to work on mathematical methods of modelling things. And while you can't create a mathematical method to model a church, certainly some of the principles I have found quite helpful as we've gone on.
Good stuff. Okay. So to what extent did your father's work as a pastor set a kind of marker for the kind of ministry that you were expecting to conduct?
I think looking back on it, it set a marker in the whole area of how he as a leader reacted to the church. And I saw some of the joys and the sheer thrill of leading a church, the sheer excitement that he had in it, and also some of the sadness and the enormous cost that that he and my mother in particular paid to see the church grow and to see it thrive and to see people thrive, which is what it's all about, really. I mean, it's people from top to bottom.
And he moved away from, you're in Banstead in Surrey? That was the...
No, that was in Woodford.
Oh, Woodford,
In North London. I was born in Hackney, so technically I'm a Cockney. Right. And his church was in Woodford. Then he moved to another church in Essex, only stayed there for about 2 years. A lot of tears in that place. And then moved to Banstead, where, again, he saw significant growth. And by that time, I was a sort of middle to late teenager and could understand a bit more about both what he was doing and what he was going through.
Okay. So some people find transition to pastoring larger numbers tough, and they bemoan the loss of contact. Others kind of breathe a sigh of relief that another staff member can handle the tough cases. How did you find it?
Well, I found it a difficult transition. It was one that I had to consciously make rather than one that you just kind of take in your stride. When I was pastoring a smaller church in Chichester when I moved there, which was about 100 or so, you could pretty much get to know most of the people in the church. Obviously, there's a fringe, there always is. But as the church grew, that became more difficult. And there's a little exercise I do when I'm training people in church leadership, and it's asking the question, how many folk can you hug all at once? and the answer is not very many. But because the pastoral ministry is all about people, you need to ask the very difficult question, well, if I can say effectively pastor about 30 people, which 30?
Hmm.
When your church is smaller, it's going to be the main contributors to the church. But as it grows larger, those 30 people are going to be different. And some people I know have even written down a list of their sort of 25 okay. or 30 people yeah. that they want to focus and still be a pastor. But obviously, their relationships with those 20 or 30 are going to be closer than they are with a much larger group of people who may be coming to the church, say, on a Sunday or go to small groups or something like that.
And, yeah, obviously Jesus has the 12 and the 72. We don't know how close his relationship was with the 72. Clearly he had a pretty close relationship with the 12 and particularly with the 3.
Yes, yes. And it was close enough with the 72 to be able to commission them to say, yeah, actually we're going to do this.
And in terms of the kind of gift mix, I guess for some listening for whom pastoral ministry is their top gift as a church leader, that's going to be harder than someone who's maybe more wired towards the teaching side, in as much as you can distinguish between the two. I know some would say the pastor-teacher role is almost, unified. I don't know how you reflect on the mix of pastoral of leadership gifts.
I think you have to work not exclusively in one, but you do have to have a bias towards one or the other according to where you are. I take your point that some people argue that both teaching and pastoring is essentially got to be the same thing. My personal feeling is that you need to teach with a pastor's heart and pastor with a teacher's head.
Right.
So that when you're dealing with the personal and difficult stuff that people face, you can do so with the scriptures in the background. And see, doing your best to pull in what God lays on your heart at that time. And at the same time, when you're standing in front of a group of people, whether it's just a small group or whether it's hundreds, to unpack that word, yes, with academic rigour, but also with an eye to how people are feeling that it's coming over.
Sure. And I've heard it said that for a pastor who invests well in their preaching ministry, they're actually pastoring people, corporately really well. So via that route. So it is actually not a waste of energy when they could be meeting people. Actually, they're, that's a good investment.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. And I think as a church grows larger, it also needs to grow smaller. The assumption is sometimes made that big churches are impersonal churches. Actually, they can't be impersonal because otherwise it wouldn't grow into where they are.
Right, indeed, yeah.
So as churches grow larger, so we as a leadership team would need to put an increased emphasis on the smaller interactions, whether they are formal small groups or whether they are other sort of fringe organisations and meetings in the church. Those matter more in a larger church. Yes, you want the big event on a Sunday and the inspiring event on a Sunday, but that's got to be matched by personal contact with a few people during the week.
I heard one pastor of a very large church who said he would see anyone once, but rarely anyone more than once.
That's true. Yes,
so that he wasn't distant. He wasn't giving all the pastoral ministry to everyone else, but he was saying, I can probably deploy my staff appropriately if I've at least met you once in terms of an interaction.
Yes, and I think that's one of the big differences between a small church and a larger one, or rather a church where there's one person who is the pastor and a church where there's a whole team of people. It is this whole question of deployment. And what should the person who is usually known as a pastor or lead pastor, senior minister, whatever title you have attached to yourself, what should that person do with somebody who they've not had contact with before? It's not on their sort of close list, as it were. Yes, see them once and do your level best to make sure that their needs are met in the church, but probably not by you.
Have you seen other churches? I mean, you've been involved in Spring Harvest, and so you're quite well versed in the different challenges that churches find in the UK. Have you seen particularly good models of how the church has grown well and some of the structures they've put in place?
Yes, I mean, the church where we worship at the moment, where I used to be the senior minister 20 years ago, have retired and now gone back there. And
oh, well.
Bless them, they don't mind us going there. But that's a church that's seen quite significant growth. And one of the routes through which they've done that is by saying that church is not just what we do on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a number of other groups they call alternative gatherings, where people who are both in the church and friends who are not in the church can be part of the church just for that morning.
Okay.
So there's a...
It's a kind of form of fresh expressions, but not...
Yes,
within
that sort
the
of thing. Yes. And they have five or six of these, I think. There's a golf one called Early Birdies, and okay. they do a lunch one, and several others. But these do engage with folk who probably wouldn't come to a conventional service. So it is a route in.
Okay. Now, expectations is a big issue. Is it possible to re-educate a church to accept a different model? Or to, because you know, if you're the pastor and suddenly it's grown, everyone is expecting you to be like you used to be, and they can easily feel upset if you're not.
My own feeling is, yes, you can educate a church, but it has to come gradually. I think if you were suddenly to impose it, it wouldn't go down very well. I think an example might come from, actually, my father's experience. He, at the time, was leading a church. This was the church in Banstead. I think it was about 100, 150, something like that. And he engaged in an evangelistic programme, trained people and so on, and went out and did it. But he was very disappointed that actually there were only six people who wanted to really follow this through. But he told me later, you know, I thought I'll work with these six and see what we can achieve. Inside 18 months, 36 people had come to faith and joined the church.
Oh, well.
And I remember him saying to me, actually, he was glad that it wasn't more than the six, because if we'd had more than that number join the church, he thought the change would have been so sudden and so dramatic that there would have been folk who couldn't have lived with it.
Oh, well. Well, you're listening to Leadership Fire with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by the Reverend Ian White. We're looking particularly at the transition from pastoring a small church to a larger one, and we'll be back just after this. Welcome back to Leadership Fire with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by the Reverend Ian White. Ian has been served as in pastoral ministry. He's just recently retired, but he served as a pastor in Purley Baptist Church, Chichester Baptist and Victoria Road Baptist in Eastbourne. He's known the challenge of transitioning from pastoring a smaller church as that church has grown, and what that's meant in terms of his day-to-day ministry life and some of the models of ministry that he's been able to adopt. Ian, slightly, hopefully not too tricky question, but it's said that some small churches have a small church mentality and are likely to stay small. I'm just wondering, within the context of all this, whether that fits.
Controversial as it probably is, I think you are right.
Yeah.
I think there are some churches that have a collective view of what the church is about. Mm. And want to maintain that. Now, I think that a small church mentality can come from various sources. Some churches are small because they just want to survive, and you can understand that.
Yeah.
There have been folk who have invested their lives in that church, and they want to keep it going as long as possible. Mm. When they do that, it can be a consequence of wanting to preserve the past, or even to replay the past, thinking that if we could only get that past model going again, then we'll see some development in the church. And I think another aspect of that sort of complexity is often ageing. We don't have as much energy when we get older.
Hmm.
And so when a church is ageing, just chronologically ageing, it's more difficult to put lots of hours and energy and effort into the church simply because the human body is limited in its span. You know, that's the way God made us.
Yeah, indeed.
Is there a small church mentality? Yes, I think we can drift into that.
Mm.
And it usually takes a catalyst or two to help folks see a bigger picture. Doesn't always happen, though.
No, sure. Now, some years ago, it was identified that many UK churches had kind of plateaued at around 500 members, and I was kind of ministered within the independent church sector, and the independent churches and Baptist churches, all that had plateaued around 500, 600 or so, and didn't seem to be able to go further. And there were gatherings around. I don't know if you were ever part of those gatherings or whether you heard about the kind of conversations that were had and why that might be the case.
Yes, I was part of some of those gatherings, and I think it's a very interesting question that churches plateau around that level. We can jump to the conclusion, I think, that it's something to do with either the psychology of the members of the church or even some level of inadequacy on the part of the leaders. I don't think either of those are easy to justify, really.
Okay.
If we were to compare the British scene with the American scene, for example, and this is where my maths comes into
yes.
it, there is one huge difference between the American scene and the British scene. The American scene, if you include the Catholics, probably 30% in most major cities will go to a church fairly regularly. Come to the British scene, and if you look, I was looking at the stats this morning, it's around about 4.8%.
Oh, wow.
So there is simply a different proportion of people going to church regularly in Britain from the United States. So therefore, if suddenly you were to bump up the number of people going to church to, you know, 30% plus in Britain, then yes, you could probably create churches that are much larger than 500 simply because there are more people around to do it. So I'm really reluctant to say that churches plateau because of any inadequacy on the part of the leaders. I think it's much simpler than that. Just there just that aren't that many people who go to church. Sadly, I mean, I wish it was more.
I mean, and some people will be probably screaming at their radio and saying, there's, you know, they'll be part of a mega church somewhere, because there are some significant mega churches around the UK and some independent churches who seem to have bucked the trend somewhat.
Yes, definitely.
You know, some of the black majority churches in London are 4,000 or 5,000 strong. So fabulous to see, but interesting that, as you say, maybe the reasoning for this is not necessarily anything other than the fact that we're at the time, sadly, in a spiritual lull in our nation.
Yeah. There is one other factor I think that's involved here, and that's the number of people who are actually doing it is really very, very small. When I was in the ministry, I had a personal pattern or discipline, if you like, to try and have at least one good phone conversation or meet up for a coffee or something with somebody who was doing the same thing as I was.
Okay.
Just on the basis that iron sharpens iron, we can spark a few bits off each other, you know. And I found that as churches grew, the number of people who were doing an equivalent job elsewhere went down quite a lot. So by the time I was at Victoria Baptist, for example, and our membership was just about 400 and Sundays were sort of 450-ish, the number of other people doing that was very small indeed, and they're actually quite hard to find.
No, sure. Yeah.
So I think there's that element in it as well, that we learn from one another. And so people who had taken a church of the size of Victoria and taken it to its next level were difficult to find, and they were also fantastically busy, and getting time was...
Yeah. And I wonder if the gift mix and the leadership skills are such that some folk maybe get beyond the point where they can function and probably need to go back to a smaller church. I don't know.
I don't know whether they need to go back to a smaller church, but there certainly is a point where you have to reinvent yourself when you're leading a larger church, because a large church is not a small church writ large. It's a completely different.
It's organ. Almost a CEO style.
It is almost a CEO style, without the kind of detachment that the three-letter CEO sometimes that I hinted at when we use those.
Sure. So, any books on leadership, Ian, that you've found of help in this area, or would want to recommend anyway?
Oh, gosh, yes, loads. I think Courageous Leadership by Hybels is good.
Yes.
One I have found was surprisingly useful to me was a little book called The Leadership Secrets of Billy Graham.
Oh, okay.
By Harold Meyer and Marshall Shelley. Now, obviously, none of us is going to replicate the kind of ministry that Billy Graham had, I don't think. But nevertheless, the principles that he worked to were very sound, and I found applying those, or doing my best to apply those in my own ministry, amazingly helpful.
Yeah. So the Leadership Secrets of Billy Graham by, again?
Harold Myra and Marshall Shelley.
Harold Myra and Marshall Shelley. I have dipped into it, and it is indeed very good. And certainly Courageous Leadership by Bill Hybels continues to be something of a classic in this area.
Yeah. I'll toss in one more while we're at it. And this is not a particularly Christian book at all. It's Good to Great by Jim Collins.
Oh, right, yes.
Now, OK, he's looking at commercial businesses. Mm. His assessment of growth is to do with share price. So it comes from a very different stable. Mm. But someone was being interviewed on the radio, it might even have been Jim Collins himself, I don't remember, who was talking about his first chapter, where he identifies people that he calls level five leaders. Mm. And the person being interviewed said, you know, they're an awful lot like Jesus Christ. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to buy this book. So I bought it. And again, it's not something that you would apply verbatim or willy-nilly to a church. You have to read it with your brain turned on. But some of its principles are very sound. And I did find those very useful, especially the sort of the level five leadership material and, you know, how to address the elephant in the room when there's an elephant and so on.
Good. Oh, so Good to Great by Jim Collins. Fabulous. And as we close our interview, Ian, how do you spend your time these days? You're supposedly retired, but you're a musician as well, or have been.
Yes, I'm a musician. I started learning classical piano when I was a child, and I've got back into that a bit.
Right.
In fact, I'm playing in a concert the end of this week.
Oh, well done.
I'm playing some Rachmaninoff as a solo, so...
Good for you.
I'm going to have to hit the piano and rehearsing-wise. But... I still do quite a lot of ministry.
Hmm.
I'm recording some preaching masterclasses at the moment. We take these out to Romania, and I'm expecting these to be up on YouTube fairly soon. And my wife and I do seminars on loss and bereavement, partly because a few years ago we lost our 22-year-old daughter. Hmm. And it was a really difficult time, as you can imagine. And one of the things I noticed was I was having to be on the receiving end of the kind of ministry that I usually try and give to other people.
Mm.
And that was a really valuable experience. And so Rosie and I, we're doing one this week, actually. We do seminars on how to handle loss. We have not licked it. You know, we are all learners, and still after Esther died several years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a mystery to all of this. You know, we're not coming in with magic answers at all, but we just find it's a useful source of ministry. And we do feel that, you know, our daughter's life can speak, even though she's not with us anymore.
Indeed.
Which is good.
Oh, bless you. Good. So people, how could people get in touch if that was, you know, if they were interested in those kind of things?
Whites, www.whites.me.uk, that's our website. Just click on Contact Us and it'll come through on my phone.
Fabulous. Good. Great. Well, it's been terrific to chat with you. Thank you. And this is going to be enormous helpful, particularly for folk who are in that transition, or maybe they're feeling uncomfortable because of these transitions and they're not quite sure why. So thank you.
Pleasure.
So you've been listening to The Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I was joined this week by Ian White. That website again, Ian, in terms of your website?
www.whites, that's the colour white with the letter S for sugar on the end, .me.uk.
Fabulous. So if you've been searching for a pen, there it is. And of course, you can get this recording on demand by going to Premier's website, and it'll be available very shortly after this recording. Good. Well, it's lovely to have had your company again, Ian, and thank you for your company, listener. Look forward to you joining us next Sunday at 3:30. Thanks for tuning in.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's word to everyday life. Contact him via email apeck@cwr.org.uk.